there is an opportunity truly to do deep science work that will go to 8.3 billion people around the world. Unfortunately, if India kind of countries continue to use and abuse antibiotics like buying candy in a shop, we are the ones who, and our children and our grandchildren and ourselves will face huge problems. 60 to 70% of infections that we get and our family gets are viral. They're not bacteria. Yeah. Which means if I just rest it out for 4 days, stay at home, take Dolo 650, stay hydrated,
you'll be fine.
I'll be fine. My late father used to always tell me, right? He attended on India's first AIDS patient.
Okay.
Okay? He told me, and I told him I don't want to do bug bugs because it's so tough. Why should I solve the world's problem? And he said, if you crack antibiotics or oncology, your work will go to 8 billion people around the world.
Hi viewers, welcome to Chai and Chips. Today we have Dr. Anand Kumar, who is the founder and CEO of Bugworks, a biotech startup involved in inventing drugs for untreatable bacterial superbugs. They are also involved in drug research in treating specific type of cancers. Anand was a semiconductor designer, a chip designer, believe it or not. And then he took a detour in drug research. We'll talk all about it. The company Bugworks has won several national and international awards. And beyond that, Anand is also involved in philanthropic efforts, which we will talk about. He is a fantastic musician as well. Last but not the least, he is the co-founder of IESA, India's Electronic and Semiconductor Association, and executive member of Biotech Association of India, codename ABLE. Welcome to the show, Anand.
Thank you so very much, Prakash. Such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's an honor. Honor is completely mine. You have done so many different things in life. Starting from chip design, you ran a couple of startups, if I'm not wrong, and then you went to drug research with Bugworks, and before that, another company, Cellworks, right? What made the switch? What is common? At first sight, these two are very different segments.
Yeah. Once again, thanks for having me. And chai and chips. So your first question starts with chips, but semiconductor chips. So I trained in the US, my master's and PhD there, and worked as a semiconductor designer, very similar to your life, your past life as well. And then came to India in 2000, thinking I'll be here for 2 years before going back to US.
Right.
And I was the founding managing director for two companies in the electronics area.
Right.
And life was great. We just started the Semiconductor Association in India.
Yeah.
And when there was no formal Semiconductor Association, and today we have 600 or 650 members in the Semiconductor Association. And it's interesting how life plays out. So I was sitting together with some of my friends from the Bay Area in Whitefield, Bangalore. And they're sitting and thinking, saying, hey, semiconductors are really booming. We're using modeling and simulation for transistor circuit design.
True.
Are there other areas that we could explore? And we started thinking about financial services to nuclear power to many things. And then a biologist joined that gathering, right? A husband-wife team. She had just come back from Stanford, a neurobiologist. And we said, can we actually use modeling and simulation for biology? So it's not that I was so great and I had this great vision and intelligence, but I had the passion to say, could we actually take what we learned in semiconductor industry and use that in the biology space to model biological pathways?
Nice.
That's where the thought process started coming. And in my 40s, I started studying biology.
Right.
So I'm still, my knowledge is very shallow, but enough to make a cogent business case. So Prakash, I started studying biology, and the more I started reading biology and cancer pathways, we started visualizing how chip design and transistor semiconductor physics can meet with pathway biology. Crazy ideas. Again, not because we had deep-sighted intelligence, but we had the passion to say, can we bring these two areas together to solve such a big problem? So it started from there, and then it mushroomed into something that completely changed my life. So it's interesting that when you want to do something good,
right,
and we really want to do something good for biology and medicine, somehow things align together to make your vision happen. And I think that was the transition that I did. The last part of that is, I could have just done modeling and simulation in biology and moved away.
Right.
And said, okay, I've done it.
Right.
I was hit with my own serious health problems and challenges around that time that almost killed me. Oh. Not once, but twice. And I said, if I got my life back, actually it's three times, Prakash, first in 2000 and then 2005 and 2007, right?
Wow.
I'm a cancer survivor. I said, that means my life has to be more purposeful than just being a CEO of a company.
Mm-hmm.
What if I can do something dramatically in the healthcare space that can give back to society and make a difference and change? So I took advantage of the fact that I got knocked out nearly thrice, and I wanted to convert that into something that can unleash things in me that I didn't know existed. These are the reasons why I moved from semiconductor to biotech.
What an incredible story. Wow. Yeah, it's an inspiration, what you did and what you're continuing to do. So on Bugworks, right? First of all, I love the brand. It's such a cool brand, Bugworks. Like I started to research the company coming up for this conversation. The more I read, it's very, very interesting. The concept of antimicrobial resistance.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's an extremely difficult space, very complex as well.
Yes.
Why did you choose, or why did Bugworks choose to focus on that? What is the difficulty associated with it? And what do you feel could be the path forward?
Great. All great questions. So from semiconductors, we started a company called Cellworks,
right,
which is the precursor to where Bugworks came from.
Right.
Cellworks is still functioning, great company that uses mathematical modeling, now AI and machine learning, to help cancer patients identify medicines for tough cancer patients called personalized medicine. While I was in Cellworks, I started seeing the writing on the wall, waking up every morning to Economic Times and Times of India saying, India is losing 2 lakh people, 50,000 children dying of infection, no new antibiotics, existing antibiotics are not working, bugs are becoming more evolved, resistant. Big pharmaceutical companies don't care about this space because it's not money-making.
And why is that so?
It's very interesting. For your viewers, every other part of pharmaceutical industry, you innovate and then you want people to use your drug a lot so you can make money and obviously also help society. In anti-infective, you're dealing with a live organism which is constantly changing and adapting itself. How are you supposed to innovate and come out with a drug that will work for at least 10, 15, 20 years before the bug breaks the drug?
True.
That's one.
True.
Which means after spending 15 years and a couple $100 million to do a drug, I have to come, Prakash, and tell, please don't use my drug unless you absolutely need it.
Right.
That patient in the ICU who's dying of bloodstream infection, no other antibiotic is working, use mine. So it's a phenomenal life-saving innovation, but the use cases become narrow.
Narrow.
Compared to taking a cholesterol drug or a sugar drug where hundreds of millions use it all their life. So pharmaceutical industry says, my God, first of all, you're chasing a bug that is so smart, that has been around for millions of years, when Homo sapiens have only been around 140,000 years.
Yeah.
We are very young species compared to these guys who have been there from the ice age.
Right.
They are smart, smarter than us.
Yeah.
After I crack the problem, I still fail as a company economically. Yeah. So there's economics challenges, there are science challenges. And to date, since the great Alexander Fleming found out antibiotics 100 years ago, in 1922, there's only been less than 10 classes of antibiotics. That's it. From penicillin till today.
I did not 10. Know that.
And the last novel class of antibiotics, Prakash, and for your viewers, happened when I was born in 1964. So I feel honored to work in a space, and our company has that opportunity of creating the first novel class of a broad antibiotic that can take out all bugs from head to toe, as they call it, from meningitis to throat issue to lung issues to abdominal issues to skin issues to bioterrorism, etc. To have a broad spectrum antibiotic, Prakash, is very hard.
True.
So I feel honored that we have the ability to work on it.
Right.
So Bugworks is working on a new class of antibiotics not seen in 60 years. That's three generations. That's the opportunity in front of us. We did bug works because, as I told you, we lose several million people per year to unsolvable infections.
True.
Because we as a common public, dear friends, abuse antibiotics, particularly in countries like India, where it's easily available.
That is so.
You use and abuse it. You have 3 bullets left in your pocket and you show your bullet to the enemy. The enemy is going to figure out ways of adjusting to that bullet. This is what is happening. Okay. Drug resistance spreads.
Mm-hmm.
The technical term for that is antimicrobial resistance or AMR. And we are now in clinical trials.
Mm-hmm.
I hope we succeed. It's always very tough. It's like climbing a mountain like Everest with no oxygen.
No oxygen.
As I say. But that's what we are working on. Novel class of antibiotics.
Right.
IV. Mm-hmm. Serious hospital infections.
Mm-hmm.
And also oral tablet available for many parts of the world that may not have access to IV. My most exciting part of all of this is our innovation from India can go all over the world. It's not done just because I want to sell my company to a US pharmaceutical company. The WHO, through a group in the WHO, have invested in our company and have taken license for 140 of the low to medium income countries.
Fantastic.
So when we succeed, Prakash, we will not just launch it in the West, but at the same time, it will be launched all over the world.
Everywhere.
Right? So I honestly wake up and go to sleep with a world map in my house, thinking how lucky I am that the work that we are doing, if it succeeds, is going to go all over this map. And that is the most gratifying feeling for me that drives me, despite it being a very, very tough task.
You're talking about purpose at the start of it. Can't be a better purpose.
I think you're so right.
Yeah.
That's my purpose.
Yeah.
And my calling.
Wonderful. Wonderful. The antimicrobial space overall and drug research in general is very, very difficult, right? So it's like I was reading some of the conversations you have had in the past, 5% success rate.
Yes.
Even in Indian cost terms, it would be 150 million or so for an average drug.
Yes.
So with all of these difficulties, what is the difference in the scientific approach Bugworks is taking versus everything else in the industry that gives you a unique position to succeed?
Great question. A bunch of things. Drug discovery is extremely tough. It is a game of snakes and ladders. You get a few ladders and then you hit a snake and you go down and have to restart, which is what we are struggling also through. It's $100 to $200 million,
right.
10 to 15 years. Therefore, the antibiotic space, there is no pipeline in the world. We got some funding from the United States government and Indian government and private investors who believed in my team.
Right.
I can't take any credit for the scientific prowess of Bugworks. Mm-hmm. We were very fortunate, Prakash, that in a strange way, that when I wanted to do an antibiotic company, AstraZeneca, who had a fabulous infection team, closed its operation in India, right? Because they decided that oncology is a better area. That talent pool became part of my founding talent pool. They're phenomenal scientists. 25, 30 years working on malaria, tuberculosis, and now working on hospital infections, right? So I got a good talent base to work.
Yeah.
We said, to your question, if we did the same thing that everybody else has done,
right,
and expect that because we are doing it, we are going to succeed, it won't happen.
Right.
Let's take a different approach.
Mm-hmm.
So the team came together and use some amazing thinking around microbiology, medicinal chemistry, modeling and simulation.
Right.
To figure out new interesting ways of entering the bug and staying in the bug.
Okay.
You have compounds that can enter the bug, but the bug has got pumps that turn on.
Right.
And these pumps can kick the antibiotic out.
Okay.
It's called efflux pumps.
Okay.
My amazing scientists, all credit to them, none to me, figured out new chemistry that makes these compounds sort of invisible to the pump. So you get into the enemy's house.
Right.
The lights are off in the enemy's house, so the enemy can't see me. And then I puncture the enemy.
Okay.
Right? And they were able to hit 2 targets inside the bacteria. It's like hitting the enemy on the head and the heart.
Okay.
So it's too much of a shock for the organism for it to want to be able to say, I'm going to figure out ways of defending myself.
Okay.
So the kill is very sharp. And because we hit 2 targets, you puncture the bacteria. And luckily for us, Prakash, that's where some alchemy helped us. that same two places I hit are available across all types of bacteria.
Oh, so you
that is where you get the broad
spectrum
impact. Whether it is healthcare or bioterrorism pathogens, if these are nasty bacteria with those two targets, we get them all. So we become a one-stop shop.
Okay.
That became the difference between us and others. Two, doing this work in India, far more affordable than doing it in Boston.
Right.
And the microbiologists and the drug discovery people I work with here are as good as the best in the world. Three, I didn't have to build an ecosystem in Bangalore. Go Bangalore. The type of incubators and accelerators that we have here, the one we sit in is called CCAMP, Center for Cellular and Molecular Platforms. It's based in NCBS, National Center for Biological Sciences.
Okay.
Gave us a great facility. So I didn't have to build a facility overnight.
Right.
So local infrastructure, talent pool, and last but not the least, the worst bugs in the world are in my backyard here. Right? So if you're able to figure out ways of killing the worst multi-drug resistant bacteria in India, that solution works for the world. In anti-infective, we say what works in India, by and large, will work for the rest of the world. These are our differentiators.
Okay.
And truly last point is many companies who have tried and failed recently have failed because they want to launch in the West.
Right.
The cost of doing clinical trials is super expensive and market conditions are not favorable for revenue.
Okay.
Low to medium income countries is where the problem is.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, India loses 4 lakh people per year on year. My people need it.
Yeah.
My doctors are most willing to adopt a new antibiotic because they need it.
Correct.
So why go and try to solve why go try to think you're solving a problem that's very small in the West and much bigger in our backyard?
Yeah.
So your markets have to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Your tough testing has to be here. So it's a confluence of all of this coming together. And the WHO has now made AMR, Prakash, as the top 3 problems in the globe.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes, top 3 problems because it can wipe out 10 million, 15 million people.
Right.
And it's the basic edifice of modern medicine. Imagine anybody in your family or my family go to Manipal Hospital or go for surgery. You are hoping they'll come out alive without any infection.
Correct.
Because you're hoping that post-surgery, no infection will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Or if infection happens, that antibiotic will work.
Well,
what if the antibiotic didn't work?
Doesn't.
As it is happening in many, many, many places now.
Mm-hmm.
Operation successful, patient gone.
Yeah.
So these are all the reasons where anti-infectives have come out to the forefront. India can become not only the noisy problem area of the world, but a solution provider for the world.
Very cool. And what, fast forward a few years, what could be the long-term vision for Bugworks?
The long-term vision for Bugworks, excellent point, is 2 things. One is our phase 1 clinical trial where we got hit with a problem and lost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We hit the snake in number 96 and went down, and now we are working our way up.
Right.
We complete phase 1 next year. We'll come to India to do our phase 2 and 3. My vision, our vision for our company is this product can be launched in the West and countries like India at the same time.
Okay.
Amazing. Our people need it. Our doctors call on us. We get calls every month for our products which are not ready today. So there is a vision here to take this product all over the world.
Hmm.
Partner with the group in WHO that will take it to the low to medium income countries.
146.
We want to launch in India, you know.
Okay.
And, you know, we make jokes that we want to have the word India and Bangalore, INBA, IMBA, in our product when it comes out. And INBAM in Tamil, which is my mother tongue, means, you know, happiness, INBAM, and peace.
So
there is an opportunity truly to do deep science work that will go to 8.3 billion people around the world. That doesn't happen every other day.
Yeah.
Therein lies our excitement.
Yeah. INBA. Okay. So cool.
That word, those 4 words will be there in the name of the product.
Okay.
When it comes out.
Okay. And what's the time frame?
Great question. Normally, it would have been 6-7 years. It's like very tough. But now, because we are desperate for new medicines in many parts of the world, including India, Southeast Asia, Africa, even in the West, accelerated timelines are there. Next year, when we complete our phase 1, after phase 1, in 3 years, we'll be able to launch this product. Either through compassionate use,
Okay.
Or regular use.
Okay.
The world waits for this product.
Yeah.
But I stay humbled by the enormity of taking this to completion and by the snakes and ladders game.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you feed you will always only hit ladders. You know. We've already hit one snake, as I said. So that just keeps you grounded, but doesn't deter you from that overarching vision that drives. Yeah.
So all that you mentioned in terms of path you have taken on scientific approach, despite that, are the bacteria there, do they have the wherewithal to counter?
Beautiful question.
For resistance.
For you and your audience, right? Alexander Fleming found 1922 and he won the Nobel Prize right, for penicillin. And in his Nobel Prize speech, instead of saying, "I'm great, I did good work," he said, "I'm already worried." So the audience was like, why are you worried? Because by the time my lifetime is over, my drug would have been beaten by the bug. Bug will always beat the drug.
Correct.
So it's only a matter of time before changes happen. Unfortunately, if India kind of countries continue to use and abuse antibiotics like buying candy in a shop, we are the ones who, and our children and our grandchildren and ourselves will face huge problems.
Mm-hmm.
So a major societal change is slowly happening now.
Right.
States like Kerala, Madhya Pradesh, Tamil Nadu, you can't just go into a pharma store and say, "Give me the latest antibiotic."
Oh, is that so?
Which is great.
Okay.
Kerala to the fore, right? In the WHO meetings, they look at Kerala and they're calling it the Kerala model.
Okay.
Just like Gujarat model for development,
right.
There's a Kerala model for antibiotics.
Okay.
That says that you use it responsibly.
Mm.
And immediately the drug resistance rates drops.
Yeah. That's
true. If you don't use and you don't abuse it, the bug doesn't get to see it that often, so it can change itself. Correct. So our product, when it comes out, will also get beaten by the bacteria. But because these rules are changing all over the world, thankfully even in India, and because we're hitting the bacteria in two places, Prakash, and we have done simulations to where even if the bug gets smart and takes out one target, the other target takes it out. So it's going to take it 35 to 40 years before it's going to defeat Bugworks product. And we will give humanity two generations of time. That'll be our contribution.
Yeah. In fact, a lot of it, I feel, is education in terms of not using antibiotics. And I'm guilty of it myself, right? I mean,
all of us are.
Yeah. We take antibiotics way more than is needed. If people understand what is at stake.
If you don't mind me showing this to all your audience, right? Particularly in India, 60 to 70% of infections that we get and our family gets are viral. They're not bacteria.
That is very interesting.
Okay, viral. Yeah. Which means if I just rest it out for 4 days, stay at home, take Dolo 650, stay hydrated.
You'll be fine.
I'll be fine. Instead of that, we go running to the clinic and tell the doctor, doctor, give me antibiotics. Or worse, somebody in the family says, "I have extra azithromycin, please try it."
Yeah.
It's the worst social habit we have.
Indeed.
We've destroyed all our antibiotics,
which
is why every year I say, totally, we're losing 4 to 5 lakh people.
Yeah.
It's like having a COVID continuing on.
Yeah.
Except we don't talk about it because it's a silent killer.
Yeah.
COVID was this big wave that came and went, right? So we said COVID. I mean, here every year, 50 people here, 100 people here, 150 people here. Finally, when it comes to my own family, I could have the same problem.
Yeah.
So our behaviors need to change.
Yeah.
Antibiotics is the last resort of the entire medical edifice.
Mm.
And that edifice is crumbling.
Yeah.
You could have the best robotics, best surgeon, best laser, and yet post-surgery get an infection or deliver a baby who picks up an infection and she cannot be saved.
Yeah. That's very sad. Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. So switching gears, you recently got an award by Forbes, right, as an innovator. And when you were receiving the award, you talked about, to quote you, "India does not celebrate science as much as it should." But you still started Bugworks in India. You talked everything that you and your team has achieved. What has been the specific challenges you faced or continuing to face as you build a really cutting-edge deep tech research, drug research company out of India?
Yeah, this is a very beautiful question. It involves science. It involves socioeconomics. First of all, as a country, we spend 0.7% of our GDP. 0.7% of our GDP towards R&D. Extremely poor for R&D.
And why do you think?
I think, I'll be honest, you know, we are a young country. We have done brilliantly well. We are only 75 years old.
That's also
independence, right? So, you know, so we have to look at it in two ways. So survival and coming out of the colonist regime itself has taken us this much time, right? So as long as we got a government job in my father's generation, we were happy.
True.
Then that moved to from government jobs, as long as I got a private job and I got settled, it was fine. Then one half a generation before us or our generation said, IT services, I'm fine. Now, new India is looking at space technology, you know, semiconductors, AI, biotechnology, EV, et cetera, et cetera. This is happening now. It's taken us this much time to come here. But our forefathers did brilliant thing for India, except a couple of things. We didn't get it right. Amount we spend on healthcare is extremely low for a country of 1.4 billion.
Agreed.
We are less than 2% of GDP. Yeah. We need to be at 6%.
Yeah.
Right? The amount we spend for R&D, your question, is 0.7%. So our DNA, we just came out of that difficult colonist time and we are kicking ass now. But we lost out some years. Low investment in R&D. Investor mentality in India, and I don't blame them because the DNA is like that, is services oriented. Or today, if I can do an app that delivers a pizza faster to you and I have eyeballs on that app, it's easier for me to get funded on that. Nothing wrong with that. That's also nice. I like to get a pizza fast at my house.
Right.
So I'm not denigrating it. But R&D spend is very low. In our country, there is no patient capital. Right? It is hard to do. But I decided to do here one because we thought what looks like a huge problem, can we convert it into an opportunity?
Right.
What if we are one of the first five or six folks who get an opportunity to make mistakes, fall down, get up, fall down, get up, but do pioneering work and create pathways that my next generation will take my work and do it 100 times better. That's how science progresses.
Yeah.
My late father used to always tell me, right? He was a famous doctor who practiced for 52 years, Dr. J.R. Sankara, head of Madras Medical College. He attended on India's first AIDS patient.
Okay.
Okay. He told me, and I told him, I don't want to do bug bugs because it's so tough. Why should I solve the world's problem? And he said, if you crack antibiotics or oncology, your work will go to 8 billion people around the world who don't know you exist. But you can feel proud that you came to this world and did something that has the impact, right? Those people don't know you exist, which is wonderful. And he said, when you're done with your science, all you would have done is you would have laid one or two bricks on the wall of humanity. You don't know how that wall of humanity is going to go, how deep, how wide, where is it going to go? But it's going to go with or without me. What if I can lay one brick on that wall?
Yeah.
Those were some of the motivations, personal inspirations that we did it. But the second half of your question is, what are the challenges? The challenges are, there is simply no funding ecosystem for deep science. The funding that we got from the Indian government, and I thank the Indian government, they've done a good job at the base level.
Right.
50 lakhs, 1 crore.
Smaller ticket size.
Smaller ticket size. Exactly. That didn't even exist. So we have to appreciate that 5,000 to 6,000 biotech companies have formed in the last 10, 15 years, which didn't exist before, Prakash.
Right.
That's great. 98% will fail. That's okay.
Correct.
2% from them will come out and become the biocons of the world, right? And change the world. So we have done a good job at the base level.
Right.
We've done a good job creating basic accelerators and incubators like VarisTech.
Yeah.
But after that, the next orbit is unaccessed. If I have to raise 5 million or 10 million, those are small numbers in Boston and Bay Area.
Okay.
And Seattle and London. You will not find investors easily here. You have to beg and borrow and plead. And it's tough. I've aged just trying to raise money in India to do this. If you don't have that purpose and passion that keeps driving you, it's easy to give up and say, I'll go to others.
And in one of the conversations you mentioned, out of 200 dialogues you have, one or two succeed.
Yeah, about 250 now. So I've failed more than I've succeeded. And, you know, these are things that truly keep us grounded, that people who slapped us and said, don't do this, you're wasting your time, you don't need to solve the world's problem. Or will I get a return in 3 years? Very fair questions. It's his or her money. They have the right to ask that question.
Right.
It's just that you don't have that ecosystem. You know, it's so interesting. It's finally, you know, the ones who put money in me finally do it because they believe in the team.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe that we have to solve our own problems. When you strike a chord with someone who understands that nobody is going to come to India and solve my problems. I'm the diabetes capital of the world, infection yep. capital of the world, oncology capital of the world.
Yep.
I need to find my own solutions. That's the Vikshit Bharat
yep.
that we talk about, self-sustenance. If I don't have self-sustenance in healthcare, everything else collapses.
That's very so true.
Last point I have is our regulatory environment is still one generation behind the United States and China. And so lack of funding
okay.
and the regulatory speed in New Delhi, these are the two biggest impediments in moving our deep science engine forward, whether it's space, whether it's EV, whether it's biotech.
Okay. That's a fantastic summary. And before we venture into the space of what could be the potential for India, let me do a lightning round with you.
Whoa.
I could ask you a set of fun questions.
I would love that.
So that audience come to know a little more about Dr. Anand as well as Anand. Lab bench or boardroom, which energizes you more right now?
I'm so sorry. Neither. It's the hallway. It's the conversations in the hallway that energize me the most.
Okay. Biotech timelines or chip design timelines? Which industry requires more patience, you think?
Biotech, much more than chip design.
Okay.
Chip design works on physics.
Ah.
Biotech works on biology. Many more unknown unknowns in biology. Unknown unknowns. Therefore, the timelines are always more in biotech.
Yeah. Yeah. Bug you fear the most? No puns intended.
It's not a bug. It's a word called complacency. That's the bug I fear the most.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that complacency in everything we do, I always tell my children that we can solve the bugs, the bacterial and viral bugs, but that complacency, that human bug, that's the one I worry about the most.
Agree. Yeah. Chai or chips? Which brainstorming, while brainstorming the next molecule?
Chai.
Okay.
Because I need that caffeine.
Huh?
You need to have this rush going. I love chips, but that rush of energy is your chai. So I will choose your chai for my next big thinking.
Okay. Thank you. The biggest challenge that biotech startups specifically in India face?
It's a coin, two sides of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
The challenges are going to be able to de-risk the capital requirement for the company is the biggest challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Closely followed and coupled with the fact that our regulatory environment and paradigms are lagging.
Okay.
So it's a coin. As an answer, the two sides of the coin are capital de-riskification
right.
and regulatory paradigm not keeping up with the speed that's required.
Okay. And last question, what's the one thing you wish more people understood when it comes to inventing new drugs or medicines?
That's a very profound question. Most people should understand that if their family is safe today, and they're safe today, it's because there's good medicines.
True.
That somebody has worked 20, 30 years of doing science, and you don't know who they are, but somebody somewhere around the world, including India, has toiled to make your family safe. Whether it's your food, the environment, the air we breathe, or healthcare, all of them require deep science and deep okay. research and drug discoveries on the health side. If, as a nation, we don't make scientific discovery part of our consciousness, we will always remain to be a services-oriented country. This people need to understand.
Yeah.
Again, nothing wrong with services.
Yeah.
Look at what IT has done to our country. Right?
Yeah.
It's transformed our country. But moving forward to become that Vikshit Bharat, people need to understand that if we don't solve our healthcare issues with our own inventions and stay focused and invent our science, we will be left far behind. We will be 1.7 billion but sick population.
That's true. Well said. Okay, so let's come back to our conversation on superbugs, bug works, and much more. So you talked a bit about it, right? And we saw it during COVID as well. India is such a powerhouse when it comes to drug manufacturing. I think it's fast becoming a manufacturer for the whole world.
If not already.
Correct. And the other part is the drug research, where we don't do enough. exactly to your point. So what do you believe is the potential for drug research coming out of India that can solve world problems like the ones you mentioned and beyond?
This is the most exciting question of the lot because it's so forward-looking and it's so real. See, India in general, we have done a great job in manufacturing and we have to appreciate that.
True.
There is innovation in manufacturing to figure out cheaper, safer, faster routes is innovation in itself. We started as generic companies, right? That's why Dolo 650 or Crozin or I can get stuff cheaply. The whole world depends on Indian generics drugs because they have good quality and they're affordable. Yeah. You and I have lived in the United States. You walk into Walgreens or CVS. I always look at where it's manufactured. In most cases, it'll be India if it's over the counter because India is very strong.
I didn't pay attention to it.
No, I do because I got into this space.
Yes.
Right? And we showed the world, ladies and gentlemen, during vaccines that we care for the world. If we didn't have Bharat Biotech, Serum Institute of India, etc., many parts of the world would not have gotten vaccines.
Agree.
The vaccines for the West don't work for the rest of the world because you need a cold chain.
Right.
How could I get an mRNA vaccine in some godforsaken interior Karnataka or Tamil Nadu place where you say, please keep it at minus 8 degrees? They won't even know what minus 8 degrees. Therefore, we were able to invent stuff that was affordable and can work in hot tropical climates around the world. We saved the world.
Yeah.
So we really admire our people, right? So that is why manufacturing is very important.
Yeah.
But moving forward, the value chain is stunted if you stay only in manufacturing. Value chain is always for the person who does their discovery and development because they cream it. And the West has been creaming that. With all the fantastic manufacturing potential we have, with the changing biotech infrastructure thanks to government involvement, with the hopefully changing regulatory paradigm, we are actually perfectly set to get into drug discovery. That is good talent. And believe it or not, lots of good talent from the United States, Indian Americans want to come back. This is actually a perfect time.
Okay.
Like for China, it's phenomenal. 20,000 Chinese scientists came back in the last 3 to 4 years back to China from US.
Yeah.
Maybe now there is an opportunity for reverse brain drain. Right? So you get some senior talent pool coming in who come from drug discovery background and use the manufacturing prowess of India. And the last point there, the most important point is there is something that is leveling the playing field, Prakash, between the West and East. It's called artificial intelligence.
Okay.
AI is completely changing the way how even drug discovery is done.
Right.
Therefore, when you used to say, let me wait for something to come from America, it's going to take 20 years to come, 30 years to come in terms of competency. Today, it's happening in a matter of months.
Okay.
I'm telling you this, well, ladies and gentlemen, for your audience. If drug discovery is 100% and AI is used 10% today and 90%, in a matter of 2 years, it may be 80-20. 80% of the drug value chain in 2 years, 80% of the drug value chain could be influenced by artificial intelligence. Only 20% may sit in conventional areas.
Okay.
If I'm even approximately correct, with the power we have in India, smart technology people who have, who are the new next generation that's raring to go, who have grown up on ChatGPT already in the last 2 to 3 years, they don't think like us.
Yeah.
So their level playing, the playing field is going to be leveled.
Because of talent.
Because of talent, they're ready to take risk. They don't even need degrees.
Yeah.
As long as they know the skill.
Yeah.
So if you have a team of 40 people, if I had 6 to 8 drug discovery people who bring drug discovery, and the rest can be tech biologists, not biotech.
Biotech. Interesting.
I'm going to call it tech bio. All These companies in India are going to flip and become tech bio companies. Tech bio is going to make the playing field leveled. So I actually think it's a great time for India.
Yeah.
With all of this manufacturing background, with the new technologies coming in, this is a fabulous time as long as we can solve the funding gap and the regulation gap.
Okay. So you talked about the R&D, the state of the R&D and what could be done. You talked about talent, incredible talent we have. You talked about patient capital. Those are essential elements for making the vision that you talked about happen.
Yes.
And of course, government policy. So are there any steps you believe India can take in those areas and even beyond? Like you talked about the ecosystem in Bangalore. You are doing a pilot along with SiteCare. in oncology space. It's a fantastic example of industry collaboration.
Yes.
But from a policymaking, talent, R&D, patient capital, are there concrete steps we can take to make it better?
Yes. Very multifaceted question. The government, particularly Department of Biotechnology, has been phenomenal in the last 10 to 15 years. Phenomenal given all the constraints of operating within government. As I told you, there are more than 6,000 biotech companies now. And even if a small percentage of them succeed, we have found problems for our Khana, we have found problems for our Hawa,
right,
and we have found problems for our health.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. These incubators and accelerators for biotech innovation are coming up in 45 to 50 parts of the country right now.
Mm-hmm.
When I started, it was in 3 parts.
Oh.
So 45 centers of excellence, like CCAMP, like Bangalore cluster, across the country.
And who is building them?
It's usually public-private partnership kind of thing. There will be a Tata Foundation plus the government, or local industry plus government.
Okay.
But the government of Karnataka, of course, is a leader. Okay. Right? That is why you find such a large percentage of startups in Karnataka. And which is amazing. And then there is Gujarat, Tamil Nadu. But Karnataka, there is no comparison. There is a distant second after that. So these incubators and accelerators happening all over the country is a major change. The question you ask is fantastic. If we don't, and we have to be humble about something, while we are proud of India, sometimes we posture more than we deliver. The Chinese are way ahead of us in biotech. I'm sorry to say, they're about 10 years ahead of us. And I will not be exaggerating if I told you, in some areas, they're ahead of the United States. Just because you and I are not aware of it, it doesn't mean it's not happening.
It does not happen. Yeah.
Okay, whether it's EV or semiconductors or biotech, the biggest deals in biotech are not happening in Boston and Cambridge. They're happening in Shanghai and Beijing.
And why is that so?
It's because they are innovating at speeds unknown to man.
Okay.
20,000 plus talent has moved from United States and UK back. Garwapsi.
Yeah.
Government is spending lots of billions of dollars into R&D research because they know R&D requires government support before private people come.
Okay.
When government is spending billions of dollars, private industry then comes into
collaborates
as public-private partnering. Yeah. That blueprint, you don't need to take it 100% because I know China's different, India's different.
Yeah.
We're a proud nation.
Yeah.
You know, we are Viksit Bharat. But there are some lessons that maybe government, instead of spending hundreds of millions of dollars, needs to invest much more. Yeah. So whether it's semiconductor or EV or biotech, this is our opportunity. The next 5 years, if as a nation we don't put deep money as a government and private, public-private, so it's not only the government's problem, we would lose out. Then we'll continue doing outsourced work for others, nothing wrong. We'll continue doing services, nothing wrong. But the value in all of the IP will be outside of the country.
Agree.
So I hope the government, by the way, we should be so appreciative. Just 2 weeks ago, Prakash, 3 weeks, government announced a 1 lakh crore fund.
Correct. Correct.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Now, will there be complexities in how it's implemented? You bet.
True.
But we should, be appreciative that they have woken up. The government is very forward-looking. 1 lakh crore is a significant
amount. Very significant.
When we used to cry for 50 lakhs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. If this is properly implemented,
and
they take inputs from industry along with academia.
Yeah.
That's a mistake we make.
Yeah.
We have only academics driving all these government committees.
But you need industry
come in. Why NIH became what it became, right? Why did NSF in the United States become what? They have great people from industry, academia, government.
Yeah.
That triumvirate coming together.
Yeah.
That is lacking.
Yeah.
You know, nothing wrong with academics, but you need academia, industry, government coming to collaborate policy.
Yeah.
I'm very encouraged by this 1 lakh crore fund.
Yeah.
That's something that didn't happen till now. Let's hope that spawns off a fantastic cascade that makes us invest in science and solve problems for our children and our grandchildren's generation from here.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to continue
taking importing.
Paying IP. Big money, complaining, why is this cancer medicine costing so much?
True.
Why is this infection medicine costing so much?
Yeah.
Wait for it to become generic.
Yeah.
Then my people make it and it's available for me.
Yeah.
I want it today.
Yeah.
And I want it to be affordable today.
Yeah.
For that, I have to innovate.
Yeah.
As they say, you have to innovate your way out of problems.
True. And one nuance I would love your opinion on is you talked about R&D and the collaboration requirement and the percentage of R&D spend being low in India, which is completely true. But the nuance behind that is the private sector investment on R&D is lower than government.
Wow, that is so true, right? And I was remiss in not mentioning this. I'm always asked by investors, why do you guys not have exits in India? We hear about Bugworks. But how many biotech companies have had investments from big Indian pharma companies? I sip them up. How many biotech companies, whether it's devices, diagnostics, drug discovery, have had exits, licensing deals from big pharma companies? How many biotechs have had full M&A acquisitions by your famed manufacturing industry? Almost none. There'll be one or two here and there, which is hard to find. This is the backdrop you have. You're right. We spend so much time talking about what the government needs to do, but we need to talk about the private sector. You are so right. And the private sector's investment in its own R&D is low.
Correct.
Therefore, the money it has to invest in other small companies and partner with them and acquire them is even smaller, which is why the VCs are not coming.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. Because I talk to VCs all over the world. We say, why are you not coming to India? India is the best story. They never blame government for lack of investment. Mm. They blame government only for regulation.
Right.
Because they don't think it's a government's problem to fix all your funding problems.
That's true.
They say, how you, your private industry seems quite happy making their profits and to their shareholders.
Yeah.
But the last 5 years, that is also changing. Mm. The big companies are now investing in their own R&D. Mm-hmm. And we hear them making some noise. Just last week, Prakash, I finished my statement with that. One of the Indian companies called Glenmark.
Okay.
Right? Glenmark Pharma, yeah. Mumbai-based.
Yeah.
Did a deal in oncology for innovation. $700 million upfront for innovation plus milestones. It made all of us sit up and say, yes.
Okay.
It looks like innovation is also starting to come from our companies. Yeah. Hopefully, we'll be able to partner with such large companies.
Yeah.
So, these are all green shoots.
Yeah.
Green shoots in R&D.
Yeah. Wonderful. So you said something about AI as you were talking about what could shift. And I would agree with you that there is a lot of intersection between science and technology that can be driven out of AI. So what potentially do you see are the intersects between biology and technologies or computational technology that can be beneficial? You said it's going to switch completely to 80-20 instead of 20-80 today.
Yes, yes, yes.
So are there things that you feel India as a country could pay attention to, the steps we could take to really get ahead or leapfrog in terms of drug research?
Wow.
Using AI.
Very forward-looking question. I appreciate that. So I want to step back. When I started my semiconductor, and you come from the semiconductor background, early 90s, started working in the U.S., I was lucky that from day one of my job as a chip designer in a company called Hughes Aircraft Company, I was asked to start looking at using modern methods for chip design. All the designers who had been working for 20, 30 years before me are like, we are doing transistor design by hand.
Yeah.
We're handcrafting it and creating a semiconductor. You're going to come and write a program that's going to build a counter, or you're going to write a program that's going to build pieces of the microcontroller? And I jumped straight into it. And within 3 years, that group became almost entirely using high-level languages, like Verilog, VHDL, etc. Mm-hmm. And now semiconductors moved much higher into AI. And
yes,
in drug discovery, it's even harder.
Mm.
The people you work with are all PhDs, postdocs, double PhD, double postdocs, who have spent their entire lives looking at one protein or one synthesis or one thing. Their rate of change is very slow.
Right.
There's always a lot of friction to say, I know what I'm doing for 25, 30 years. Right. How can AI come and do it?
Right.
That has changed in the last 12 months.
Oh, really?
Because people are starting to see from Google to Meta to NVIDIA, people are starting to say AI biology is going to be the biggest thing.
Hmm.
Because it changes, like I said, it changes your UTA, it changes your HAWA, it changes your health. Three most important things for us.
That's true.
Correct? Yeah. The air you breathe, the food you eat, and the health of you and your family.
Well summarized.
Right? Yeah. Nothing can be more important.
Yes.
EV is nice, but it comes next.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Right. Mobility comes next. So, to your question, artificial intelligence has come up very quickly and is going exponentially. you know, thanks to NVIDIA, thanks to large language models, you know, all of this stuff happening. And Google has invested a lot into this space through what is called AlphaFold.
AlphaFold, yeah.
What used to take a year to hit an X-ray on a protein and get its crystal structure is happening in minutes.
Okay.
Because of learning. Mm-hmm. So structural biology, where you're looking at proteins and trying to find out their structure, is the first place that's almost going entirely into AI.
Right.
Once you have a structure of something, you need to figure out how a compound is going to come in, connect, and roll around with that structure.
Okay.
It's a tough problem to solve.
Right.
That problem is also starting to get solved.
So you can visually...
You can visually see if your compound is connecting, how is it compounding, can I change the compound slightly, run simulations, blah, 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 blah. And garbage in, garbage out. You need to put good data into.
True.
But 70% of drug discovery, Prakash, for you, for your audience, the cost and the time is in clinical trials.
Okay.
That's a tough part. It's not all this beautiful discovery here. You go to clinical trials, something that worked in animal doesn't work in human, for whatever reason.
Yeah. And it takes a long time as well.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, 100 million, 150 million, 7%, 8% success rate. That's where the problem is. Okay. Not in upstream discovery.
Okay.
There, AI is changing everything. The entire FDA database, European Medicines database, Indian CDSCO database has been studied by AI. So it knows all protocols ever done for any medicine.
Okay.
So it understands how to come up with the most optimal clinical trial protocol design.
Okay.
And by doing that, can potentially allow adaptive clinical trials that you run on n number of patients. If you get this result, reduce the number of patients. If you get that result, increase the number of patients. Adaptively, it can come up with new protocols. And most importantly, prediction of whether your medicine will work in man. You're not yet there.
True.
But that is going to completely change drug discovery. If I have predictive algorithms that said, if you get this kind of data on a dog, on a mouse model, you're likely to have success in human who has this kind of background. That gap is being closed now. So that is why I'm saying in a couple of years, it's going to be 80-20. Is it going to replace drug discovery people? Absolutely not.
No.
That's a moot discussion. But with a group of 10, 15, 20 good drug discovery people, you add AI machine learning to it, it's going to go wonders. And any company that doesn't move that way, including mine, will become dinosaurs.
And what have you started to make the moves on in terms of new workflows, thoughts?
My team is excellent. You know, I respect them. They had initial hesitancy because AI was much more hype than reality 5 years ago. Everybody is getting funded saying, I can go to the moon tomorrow with AI, right?
Yeah.
So I appreciate them. They want to see data. Now that they start seeing data, we see them incorporating a lot of tools in simulating how my drug is going to behave in man.
Right.
In the characteristics.
Right.
You take a drug, it has to go, concentration rises, comes out, right? That's called ADME and pharmacokinetics. They started looking at a lot of AI tools for that. They're looking at AI tools to customize clinical trial protocol design. They look at AI tools to look at how a molecule is coming and binding with the structure. I see that happening. And my previous company, Cellworks, we are collaborating with them.
Okay.
And they are predicting which patients my oncology drug will work and why.
Okay.
And then the collaboration with SiteCare Hospital that you mentioned,
right,
where we sit inside SiteCare Hospital and we get patient sample, we use AI. So basically, after you get the patient sample, you put your drug on it to see what happens to that tumor sample. And digital pathology takes a picture of it and does a study and tells us your drug is actually getting into the tumor and causing the tumor to shrink in size. So this is a new world. You know, gone are the days that says you cannot be in drug discovery if you don't have 15, 20 years experience doing structural biology or pharmacokinetics.
Right.
You still need that knowledge base. But AI is changing the playing field. And I don't think we are late in adopt. I would have preferred us to have adopted something even faster 5 years ago. But I respect why I had the pushback, because it was so much hype.
Yeah.
So initially things start with hype and now it's leveled off into an exciting reality.
Yeah.
And you'll see Bugworks making some announcements around AI in the years to come.
Look forward to it. Yeah. So you have done a couple of startups in drug research, chip design before that. You're company is recognized across the world, what are one or two achievements or milestones you believe are very close to your heart? And how did you come about doing that along with your team?
Yeah. Past milestones, right?
Yeah.
By the way, the milestone I'm looking forward to is our completion of our phase one clinical trial.
Okay.
And I said that will change.
Okay.
Because that will really put India on a world map that we'll be moving to phase two and people will take us very seriously. Mm-hmm. The milestones we have done, the very fact that we could put a drug discovery team in India when everyone said it's not doable, don't do it. Get into manufacturing. Nothing wrong with manufacturing. It's still doing good work.
Mm.
And we went where no one else has gone is in itself a milestone. And I couldn't have gone there had it not been for all the investors who believed in us. Mm. They only believed in the people and the messaging. I don't have spreadsheets. Business pitch doesn't have spreadsheets.
Right.
So that means they have to believe in the message, the messenger and the message.
Yeah.
And the team.
Yeah.
And invest in us. So I really, really, very thankful to all of them. And I'm thankful to my team. None left us. Because this kind of work, they won't get anywhere else. So the very fact that we were able to put a company like this together was in itself a big victory. Second big milestone is to get the U.S. government to invest in an Indian company via a grant called CARBX. C-A-R-B-X is a huge milestone. Without that, we couldn't be where we are. And the third milestone is having the WHO on the table, partnering with us, which doesn't happen to small biotechs.
Yeah.
To take your innovation all over the world.
All over the world.
And believe in us, even when we're having problems.
Yeah.
And the fourth and the last milestone is the ability to work with hospital like Sidecare Hospital and to forge a local partnership where we gain access to post-surgery tumor to test our products and et cetera is quite unprecedented in India. It's not unprecedented in Cambridge, but here it is. So these few milestones, I'm humbled about, but I'm really looking forward to waking up next year when our phase one clinical trial is done, because then we will accelerate 2 and 3 and try to bring this product to man quickly.
Very, very cool. So when you founded Bugworks, you and your co-founders were in your 50s and 60s at that time, right? That is in itself is an inspiration for everyone, including me. No question, right? So what are the things that young innovators sitting out of India wanting to do, like putting India on the map, like the work you're doing here, could learn from your journey through that path?
Yeah, we are often asked this question, and I speak to college audience as well. There is this notion among youngsters today that they can, five of them can get laptops, sit in Koramangala in a third wave cafe and do startups and make money overnight.
Mm.
Thankfully, people are understanding that that's just, it's a fallacy. When they look at people in the 50s and 60s trying to solve big problems, I hope, they will take inspiration that there are people watching out for us and our parents and our children by doing stuff that is so groundbreaking that they could just retire. I'm 60 today. I could just simply retire and sing or do whatever it is that I like, or philanthropy that I'm very passionate about. But I feel that, I have a short life and I want to make my life count. I want these youngsters to know that they're growing up in a brilliant India that you and I didn't have. We left abroad because we thought U.S. was everything.
Yeah.
And today's U.S. is a different topic for another Chai and Chips. But I want these youngsters to realize that they're growing up in a new India that's waiting for 2047 when we are going to be a developed country.
Right.
They cannot ask, what is India doing for me? As John F. Kennedy said, right? Ask not what the country does for you, what you do for the country. Yeah. If I can steal his quotation. I tell those youngsters, if somebody in their 40s and 50s are willing to dedicate the rest of their life in solving big problems that are going to impact that youngster's life when she or he is in their 40s, let's say diabetes or cardiovascular or infection, this is a great country to be in. That means people believe in our country.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not waiting for somebody else to solve my problem and I'm waiting for the Western company to solve my problem.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to know that investment in science, solving our problems, and making your life count It's the biggest lesson. There is no religious lesson. There is no nothing else that is of interest except saying, I've come, I'm here, I'm in a great country, you know, that's path-breaking country. What am I doing to make my life count? That's the only thing I leave a youngster with, because they're a WhatsApp generation. They don't have time for anything else. If they can know that there's a guy in his 60 who wants to still, till his last breath, do work, not because I'm interested in money or fame, because all of those things are fallacies and transient. But I want to say, I came into this world. What am I leaving this world with? Is it a better place than it was when I came? That's what it's a question I want to leave them with.
Super, super. So, you have done so much in your life, right? A lot of it you talked about, a lot more we haven't talked about. And one element of it is philanthropy. So, you have founded companies, you have switched from chip design to semiconductors. You are such an inspiration, such a passionate spokesperson for drug research coming out of India. And you still find time for philanthropy. So, what is it about? What's your goal there? And if the audience can learn more about it, it would be wonderful.
I'd like to first of all start by saying that by doing philanthropy, I have never helped anyone. I want to be very honest. It has made me a better person. So if somebody is thinking that I want to do philanthropy because I want to help the world, it's a wrong way to go into it. I'll be very honest. Mm-hmm. We have to be very humble by the fact that opportunities are all around us.
Right.
I grab those opportunities. I am never, you know, really, it's not that, oh, 10,000 people are benefited by what I have done. I have benefited by the philanthropic journey. I want to put the point out straight out there, right? So it has given more to me than I have given to it. Point number two, I came from a family, as I said, my dad practiced for 53 years. He changed medicine in Chennai. My brother's a famous doctor. Chennai. So I come from a family filled with doctors and philanthropists who always did work. It was there in my subconscious. The same health problem that I spoke about earlier in my thing. Mm-hmm. This is the other thing, right? Things that completely knock you off. You can either sit back and say, you know, why this is happening to me? Or you can say, wow, it happened to me and I was meant for something great. No time for self-pity.
Yeah.
So part of that no time for self-pity, that I need to do things in a hurry, was philanthropy and drug discovery.
Okay.
Drug discovery, because it can go to millions and billions of people if your innovation is successful.
Right.
Philanthropy, because you can make a difference to 5-10,000 people.
Right.
So I wanted to get into philanthropy. Mm. A kind person introduced me to some good people in Chennai. Mm. And I'm a co-founding trustee in Child.
Okay.
For the last 19 years.
Wow.
And we take care of children who were initially abandoned by HIV parents. Because my father was the first doctor to attend on AIDS in India.
Okay.
Patient number one came to my house.
Okay.
So I was very proud of the fact that when nobody would touch an HIV patient with a pole, my dad risked his life.
Mm.
Right. So I wanted to do something for HIV, meaningful. And I got this opportunity to help HIV orphans through Child. That has now mushroomed into something massive. We have girl children program, young boys program, residential school program.
Okay.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of children have gone through it.
Right.
And just last year,
right,
we launched a vocational training program in Child for girls.
Okay.
Right. Someday I want to bring transgenders in, because right, in our society, a transgender can be a prostitute,
yeah,
or a beggar.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Only two things possible: prostitution, yeah, begging.
Yeah.
So someday I hope I can do something for transgenders, but right now it is for girls who,
okay,
come from very poor backgrounds,
right,
abandoned backgrounds. They're starting to learn AI, giving the basic introduction to computers, introduction to tally software in accounting, get them ready for skills. I don't care about degrees. In India, degree is waste.
Right.
Today's day.
Right.
We have to think like the Europeans of the 1940s and 50s, where a car mechanic is paid more than a doctor.
Yeah.
In Germany.
Trade skills are so much better.
Skills. If she comes and I can teach her accounting, I don't care if she got BA, BCom, MA, MCom.
Mm-hmm.
She has that grade. Good for her.
Mm-hmm.
If she wants to.
Right.
But she's going to get a job because she gets a skill.
Yeah.
So we're getting a skill development program. Okay. So Child is one thing.
Right.
The second thing is, along some kind-hearted friends in Bangalore, we started Humanist Foundation.
Right.
To help poor people who will not be able to afford oncology treatment. Site Care Hospital had the heart.
Okay.
To say, let us create it.
Okay.
And almost free of cost to that patient.
Okay.
We have done about 500 patients so far, 510 or so. Mm. I hope it also mushrooms. Because a good hospital like SiteCare came on the table,
right.
We came together,
right.
A friend of mine, Jogin, myself, and Dr. Farzan, Ramu, and others, and did humanist. The third philanthropy is a science philanthropy.
Okay.
Where science and philanthropy come together. In India, we don't fund science. We spent the last 50 minutes talking about it. A great group of scientists around India got together and said, let's do an NGO called Ignite Life Sciences, where we will raise money from society and fund science privately in our country.
Okay.
Why does funding of science have to be only from government?
Right.
So now we are embarked that and we're funding many projects all over the country called Ignite Life Sciences. So that is the coalition, you know, coalescing scientific interests, philanthropic interests coming together.
Okay.
Think about science as a philanthropy. If I invest in a next generation vaccine for dengue, that's the biggest philanthropy you could do.
Yeah.
If that, particularly if that medicine is available to millions of my countrymen at affordable price, what bigger philanthropy can be there? So it took me age 60 to understand that science and philanthropy can coexist. So these are the reasons why I'm in philanthropy. And again, I'll finish with what I started. I have gained much, much, much more than I can ever give back.
Wow. I have no words to describe what you're doing. But I have an honest question, Anand. You are doing so many different things. You're a founder. You're a cancer survivor. You're a philanthropist. You've done many other things. How do you find the time?
I work with great people. And, you know, I'll be very honest. I was a man of average intellect. I know my strengths, right? Above average intellect. But I always had the skill of identifying good people to work with, whether it's in my school, Don Bosco School, Madras, or Guinea Drain College, or friends in the US, or friends in Bangalore. I work with people who are 10x smarter than me. And thankfully, I am able to appreciate that they're much smarter than me and learn from them. So in all of these things I spoke about, I'm only an igniter.
Mm.
I bring my passion, my energy, and I try to bring my pure intent and networks. Teams that I had in CellWorks, in BugWorks, in Ignite Life Sciences, in Child, in Humanist, everything that we do, the teams are delivering.
Yeah.
You know, they believe in me, I believe in them. It's as cliched as it sounds. If you surround yourself with people who are smarter than me, know that they're smarter than me. I want to learn from them always so there is no ego. Man, you unleash some amazing things. If you can just set aside your stupid ego, you can unleash amazing things. I ask the most basic questions every day, Prakash. When I go to our labs in C-CAM, I'm sure they think I'm an idiot sometimes. I have no problem. I'm going to remain a student all my life.
Wow. Yeah. It's very, very simple what you said, but so hard to do. Yeah. From what you have achieved in life, even harder to do, I would say. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I believe in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So last question that I ask all my guests is about just future forward India. So India's position in deep tech, including areas like drug research, is not only about domestic consumption or domestic growth. It's putting India on the map, right? So if you fast forward a couple of decades, what is your vision of India's position on that global map from a deep tech perspective? And what steps could we take right now in order to achieve that vision?
Beautiful. First, we have the vision, so we stay positive, right? And then look at what we're doing. As we said, our governments are trying to do their very best. Given the constraints we have, we are a complex country. 20 years from today, some of the top medicines of this world in areas like cancer, diabetes, aging, infection, will come to the whole world from India. It's already going to happen. Because Indians believe in affordable innovation. West is expensive innovation. We don't have that kind of money. We will never have that kind of money. We don't need that kind of money. Even BugWorks, if we are successful, I want my product to go all over the world. I want India first, because they're my people. It's my brothers and sisters. But I want this innovation to go all the world. So somebody in Botswana or somebody in Vienna, Virginia, will say, wow, Indian innovation saved my life. Right?
Yeah.
So, we are already marching towards that. And I think our affordable innovation plus our manufacturing capacity is very hard for other countries to put up manufacturing capacities like we have, particularly in vaccines, those kind of areas. Childhood illnesses, very strong, India's. World needs India for, you know, diphtheria and smallpox and measles vaccines. So I see 20 years, first of all, we'll be getting closer to Viksit Bharat.
Yeah.
So your question beautifully comes to 2047. An honorable prime minister wants India to be a truly developed country by 2047. Correct? Mm-hmm. So I'll start from there. To be a truly developed country, I need to be healthy. Right? I need to be able to fix my health if I have problems.
Right.
Because innately, Indians, our genes make us more prone to cardiac issues, to diabetes issues, etc., etc. So, we will be the country that lead the world in many aspects. We will never be number one. I think that is too much of patriotic fervor that is not backed up with data. We will be in the top two or three with US, China, and India.
Right.
Right. Lots to catch up with China, as I said. And I'll come to that in a second. So, I see in 20 years from now, with artificial intelligence, with a young population coming in, with clinical trials happening in India, affordable medicines in affordable innovation in India, so many incubators, accelerators in our country, so much of manufacturing, if only the regulatory piece also improves, which is only a matter of time, nothing to beat India. Okay. Then we will be sitting 20 years from now and saying, we won't be just talking about manufacturing alone.
Right.
Manufacturing will always be important, but we'll be talking about innovation in drug discovery also coming. But to get there, schemes like the government has announced, the 1 lakh crore scheme,
right,
should be properly implemented. Mm-hmm. Putting a scheme and getting it funded is one thing. Mm-hmm. Having the right infrastructure and committees to drive it, so the right people who are working on the most important problems get this money, is the second problem. Mm-hmm. I hope we put enough emphasis on the second part.
Right.
Hats off to the government to do what it does. Number one, our regulatory paradigm, again. And third, big pharmaceutical industries in India and the big agri industries in India have to step up their own investment in R&D. Mm-hmm. They have to develop the ecosystem. If as a small company, I've gone around the world to develop AMR ecosystem, the big companies can do a much better job than me because they have more resources, more people, more experience. Mm-hmm. Why are they not investing in small companies? Why are they not coming and acquiring small companies? Why aren't licensing deals happening in India? So it's not just for the government to solve this problem. The industry also has to wake up to do it. And last but not least, we have to be very careful about how we integrate AI into biology and data, because this involves a lot of confidential data.
True.
I think a country like India, where we lack discipline, we are just an indisciplined bunch. We are a smart bunch, hardworking bunch, great culture, great history, but we are absolutely indisciplined, which is why the British, 50,000 British took over 50 crore Indians, because of our inherent indiscipline. AI will expose that indiscipline in ways that we can't even begin to fathom. All of our data could be available everywhere. All the governance around AI infrastructures, we need to get that right. So that concerns me, and that is going to become a central theme, whether it's agro tech, EV tech, semiconductor tech, biotech, space tech. Common theme is going to become data integrity, data fidelity.
Right.
We need to spend much more time on it. So I dream of a 20-year thing where many of the diseases that plague hundreds of millions of people, not just in India, but all over the world, solutions will come from India. The West cannot solve the world's problems. We will.
That's a fantastic articulation on what we can do together.
Together.
Yeah. So is there, we covered so much ground, is there anything you wanted to cover that we didn't?
I think you've covered everything. It's just that I just want to leave your audience and you to know that my comments are not purely coming from nationalistic, patriotic fervor, because that will die down as soon as I walk out. It's rooted in what I see is happening, right? And I feel very fortunate that I got opportunity to work in two very different areas, semiconductors and biotechnology. And whatever little milestones of success I've got in life are because of ability to adapt. So I want youngsters listening to you to know that while there is all this LLM and AI and everything, learns one or two areas deeply. My biggest worry is now we're going to become a flitting generation.
Right.
And you go quickly into ChatGPT, you find your answer, or Perplexity, or whatever. You're not getting deep into anything. Take one area at least and get in-depth knowledge and be open to adaptation. And I want to leave the 20-year-old or 30-year-old watching this news. If a 60-year-old can wake up every day feeling that he knows nothing, because I do know nothing, I know very little, wants to learn, and I find that AI tools are allowing me to learn new things, not just making my life easier. Big difference. AI tools making my life easier, good for all of us, but it needs to allow me to study, learn more also in depth. So that adaptability, adaptation, and the thirst for knowledge is the only way we will succeed and this country will succeed.
Couldn't be a better way to close our conversation, Anand. So thank you very much
for
coming.
Thank you so very much. You've done so much work. I can see it. And really, really
amazing, amazing conversation. So you are an absolute inspiration, I'm sure, for everyone listening to it would be as well. And look forward to all the success for Bugworks and your entire team that is working so hard and continuing to work so hard on the phase one trials.
Thank you so very much. I love the Chai Chips format. And thank you, guys.
Yeah. So for everyone listening in, please tune in to any channel that you listen to our podcast or watch our podcast. Please give us feedback on how I can do better and what more or what different things you would like to listen to. Thank you.